It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 572 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with Paul Aller from Pink Midnight Presents The Butterfly House, which has a Zoop.gg crowdfunding project going on right now. Paul is best known for their work on properties including Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. They developed the Death Ranger, a non-binary villain in the Power Ranger universe. It's described this way. The Butterfly House will take you places you will not expect and leave you pondering its implications long after you've reached the last page. We delve into this deeply personal story for Paul, which is part existential horror story and part allegory for Paul's own discovery of their gender identity. It's an engaging comic that will take the reader in a silent descent into one person's nightmare. Be sure to support it today after you listen to this interview. I'm sure you will enjoy what Paul has to say. There is a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show! It's great to welcome to the podcast Paul Aller, the creator of a great book called The Butterfly House, which is being crowdfunded now at zoop.gg, and it's going to be complete in roughly 30 days or so after launch. So how's it going, Paul?
It's going all right. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you. And before we get started into The Butterfly House, why don't you tell people what your experience is in comics?
Sure. I'm a writer, mostly a writer. I've done some lettering and editing as well. I've been working in comics about 10 to 12 years now. I think it was 12 years ago that I started self-publishing my first work. And I've been doing, more well-known, like work for hire stuff for about the last decade as well. I'm probably most well-known for my Ninja Turtle stuff. I've done quite a bit of that at IDW. I had a G.I. Joe run a few years ago, where they kind of like let us reinvent the concept of G.I. Joe from the ground up with IDW and Hasbro, which was a lot of fun. I did that with Chris Avenhaus. And on the creator-owned side, I've had a string of books. I did a Vietnam War comic called Tet with Paul Tucker. I also did a Hollow Heart with Paul Tucker, which won the Indiana, Author's Award last year. That was very cool, being an Indiana resident. And a couple of other things, Monster Mechanica for Aftershock, Past the Last Mountain for Comics Experience. Sorry, I was just struggling to remember my own comics at this point. Anyway, I don't want to just rattle off my credits, but I've been working in comics for about 12 years, and done just a bunch of stuff. So, yeah.
So you basically are a writer mostly.
Yes, yes.
Okay, because you said you lettered as well. I always fume about lettering because when people letter, they tend to cover up artwork.
Gotcha.
And I do a little video review thing that I do about 10 minutes. And I often am nasty about letterers because they don't. If I go through in a book and they cover over like a person's face or something,
that's lettering malpractice. Unless it absolutely had to be done because the layouts didn't allow for anything else. But yeah, I mean most artists, they do layouts that allow you to not have to. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if they sent you a PDF of The Butterfly House, but it actually, it's funny we're talking about lettering because it's a completely wordless comic. So, I generally letter my own creator owned stuff, but in this case, I did not have to because the book has not a single word in it.
That's what I was going to talk with you about. The reason I bring up, you mentioned letterer and it immediately brought to mind the fact that there is no dialogue in this book.
Yeah.
So you're dependent on.
On the artist. Yeah, absolutely. There's no dialogue, and it's in black and white. So when I first started sending it out, I had people who were like, hey, you accidentally just sent me the inks. I'm like, no, those are the final pages.
It's fascinating. Well, the description on Zoop, I want to read some of that because I think it's important for people to know. It says, Pink Midnight presents The Butterfly House is the first in a planned series of weird one-shot comic books from writer Paul Aller, artist Juan Romero, and editor Claire Napier, all presented in one stunning black and white art. The first issue is a silent descent into one person's nightmare as our protagonist, I don't even name the person, as it enters the titular butterfly house and soon discovers they may never be able to leave. This is a deeply personal story for Paul, part existential horror story, part allegory for Paul's own discovery of their gender identity. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I'm not sure everybody's going to understand what that means. What happened? What's this all about?
That's a lot, man. I don't understand what all that means. No. yeah, I think the part a lot of people are going to focus on there is the gender thing. I did. I came out as non-binary last year, the year before. I think it was last year. Might have been the year before now. I don't know. At some point in the last couple of years. and this book was kind of, kind of the result of a lot of the thought that went into that for me and sort of me like exploring notions of gender and my own thoughts on it and my like preconceived notions. And a lot of that journey for me was kind of, thinking that the lack of gender identity I had was typical. And then, you know, I kind of threw a lot of conversations with especially a lot of cis friends about it, discovering that my experiences weren't really typical of cis people, that I just assumed that, you know, because it's the fascinating thing about being human is that, you know, there's like, 7 billion of us? And you know what it's like to be one human, you know? Mm-hmm. And we tend to from that, extrapolate that whatever our experiences are, that must be everyone's experiences. And there are some universal experiences that we assume, but we don't know, you know? Like, we don't know if other people have the same, even the most basic thought processes that we do. We don't know if other people experience love or pain the same way we do. We assume, we guess, but we have no idea. This book is definitely very much a reflection of that journey for me, but in a very allegorical way, not a way where you would read it and go like, you know, oh, that was about the writer realizing that he's non-binary. Like, you know, no one will walk away from this book thinking that, but it's definitely there.
Okay. For people who may not understand, how do you define non-binary?
Basically I don't relate to either gender to much of a degree. And like it does everything, it's a spectrum and it does sort of vacillate, but I would say that for the most part, you know, and you know, so yeah, I guess I wasn't, for some reason, I was not expecting that question. That's a, okay. It should be an easy question, but it's also a very big one. but yeah, that's basically what it boils down to is that I've never felt like a man. I've never related to much to the idea of masculinity. And I always thought that everyone felt that way, and that it was just some gigantic social construct that we had all agreed to, even though none of us felt it. You know what I mean? But then, like, talking to some of my friends, they're like, yeah, no, I do feel like, of course I feel like a man. Of course I feel masculine. Of course I feel, you know, feminine, like talking to my cis female friends. And so I was like, oh, okay. And then so that was, of course, just the starting point for me to really like examine it and think about it and just come to a revelation about myself.
Okay, okay. Now, the last sentence in the description says, "The Butterfly House will take you places you will not expect and leave you pondering its implications long after you've reached that last page." And I have to say that's pretty true. I got a chance to read it. It's 26 pages long.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some interesting twists in there. And how much of this book can we discuss? I don't want to spoil stuff. But on the other hand, I want to talk about it. So
yeah.
What can we talk about?
I think we can talk about everything but the very ending. And we can talk about overall, like sort of what we're dancing around is the idea that like this is this falls into the category of like weird fiction, of slipstream fiction, meaning that like it's not the kind of thing where you're going to get through it and be like, I understood that story A, B, C, D. But my hope is that it will feel like a true and complete and logical story in a certain dream logic sort of way. That it will feel like something that made sense even if you don't know exactly what happened, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I feel weird making this comparison because he's like a master of the storytelling craft. But I think the closest comparison I can think of, something that a lot of people are familiar with, is like the work of David Lynch, where when you finish watching, you know, Twin Peaks, especially Twin Peaks: The Return, the third season, or most David Lynch movies, you may not know what the hell just happened, but it feels like it was complete, and it feels like it feels the same way that a more traditional narrative does, just in a more surreal and dreamlike way.
Okay. So we start out the book and we have, as it's described, the protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
He's walking up a path, and he's going to a building. And on that first page, we see him actually reach the building and he opens up a door. And that's where we see him getting inside the building, and of course, it's called the Butterfly House, and sure enough, he gets inside the building, and there are butterflies in there. And he's walking through, and one of the interesting things about this book is that a lot of the pages are like single-panel pages, which is interesting to see because, you know, most comics have multiple panels with all kinds of dialogue boxes in it. And I have this, I always tell people, I have this real problem when I run into massive dialogue boxes. Mm-hmm. I don't read them. I actually kind of look at it and go, oh, they're trying to say something, and I turn the page. I figured they'll cover that later on when I don't, when I get to something, they'll visually represent what all those words meant. But you don't have that there. It's basically all visual. Of course, that leads me to a question, though. What was it like to write this? I mean, as far as, because you're used to writing with dialogue, is this something you've wanted to do for a while and finally got the chance, or did this kind of in the story just present itself? How did you decide to do it this way?
Yeah. One thing I would say that's interesting is that you mentioned like the splash pages, the one panel pages. I think there's like three of them in the book, which is, you know, a bit higher than average, but like it's not uncommon to see a superhero book, you know, like a DC Marvel thing that has like two splash pages over 20 pages, and this is like three over 24 pages. So, but I think that like the nature of the story makes it feel like there's more than there are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, as for what I was like to write it, yeah, it actually, in addition to it being dialogue-less, I also wrote this in like what used to be known as like Marvel style, where I basically plotted it out page by page and left it to Juan to do a lot of the individual paneling. Like it's kind of a hybrid, like where there are a lot of places where I suggested, you know, and I wrote it in such a way that like, you know, the page plot would have like five short paragraphs and they more or less could equate to five panels, even though I didn't say that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But just because Juan is so, so good at layouts, and he's such a brilliant storyteller. And really this whole, the whole Pink Midnight Presents project was partly a result of, of me wanting to do these kinds of weird stories with Juan because he's so good at that mode. So yeah, it definitely was very, very interesting. Like it was different in a lot of ways. It was different because of the lack of dialogue. It's different because I did it in the more plot-based format. And also the whole story kind of came to me all at once. I was actually on a plane, and sort of like in that sort of half asleep, half awake place that you get to sometime, on a plane ride. Mm-hmm. And this story just kind of crept into my mind and sort of like almost like unspooled itself in real time in my brain. And like, there was no, I didn't really have to go back and like, you know, oh, I'll change this and I'll change this. It really just kind of came to me fully formed in the way that it plays out. You know what I mean? I mean, like I had to, obviously in the writing, I had to like, you know, get down to the nitty gritty of things, but like in terms of the overall plot beats, it really just came to me, all at once in a very kind of dreamlike and ethereal way.
Because on like the fifth page of the book, we notice there's several butterflies, more than what we've seen before. And right. It kind of reaches out and tries to touch one, but it kind of flitters away.
Yes.
At that point. And then he continues in the butterfly house, and we don't see quite so many butterflies. And that's when he comes across the humans. Yes. What do you want to say about that?
That's the point where it does turn into a little bit more of a horror story. Where yeah, in the middle of this this tranquil butterfly house setting, he basically turns a corner and sees a very ratty looking hospital bed, and a medical team around it, and they basically attack him, and their intent is to make him undergo a medical procedure against his will.
Mm-hmm. And he tries to get away.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it wouldn't be a story if he did, but
right,
he does his very best, but let's just say that isn't how things turn out.
Yeah.
He's got to, and for this book to have to get someplace, we've got to do these kinds of things. So he actually is at one point, finally the procedure begins, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting, I almost hate to say this because it kind of spoils a little bit of something, but you know, we saw butterflies before, and the one flitted away from him when he tried to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And now in the middle of this procedure, a butterfly lands on his nose.
Yeah.
Which is saying something, which is allegorical. There's a transformation in him and his relationship to the butterflies.
Yeah.
Which is going, he smiles, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens. And then, of course, more starts to happen as far as the procedure goes on. You know, see, this is where I get into the, I'm nervous about spoiling too much.
Yeah, that's probably about as far into the plot as I'm comfortable going as well, except in like a fairly vague way. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because that was what I thought. There's everything that's been presented so far is important to the ending.
Yeah,
let's say it that way, because
yes,
you have to know what's to understand what's happening at the end. You have to really pay attention to the early part of the book. And I like stories like that. I like stories that demand I pay attention to. Just like I said, sometimes if it's too much dialogue, I'll skip over it, and I kind of feel a little cheated when I do that, actually. But I like to try to pay attention and really get the story. And so as I started to get into the latter part of the book, I had to pay more attention, shall we say, because certain things start to happen that surprised me.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah.
More than that, I'm not going to say, but
one interesting thing about this book is that I, in addition to writing comics, I'm also a teacher. I teach comics writing classes for Comics Experience. And I talk a lot to my students about trusting your reader and writing comics where they do have to be engaged. Because I think that if a reader has to do some work, on your story while reading it, that's a more enjoyable reading experience than something where you can just turn your brain off. And so in my creator own work, it's really like a place for me to sort of, you know, put my money where my mouth is and put a lot of my ideas about comics writing into action. I think this book is a pretty prime example of that in all the ways that it, like, you know, steps away from mainstream comics while still trying to honor those principles and tell a great story. Cause I do, like, this is a weird story, but I do think and hope that this is also a great story.
Yeah. It's fascinating because I'm still at the end. There are places still to go, shall we say.
Yeah.
And I compare this to, like, the difference between the show Lost and the show 24. Mm-hmm. Lost, I used to watch, and I often would have my computer on. I'd be working on my computer, and I'd start to hear music in the background. That's when I'd turn from my computer and look at the screen, because something was going to happen on the screen.
Right.
There wasn't a lot of dialogue going on. I was like, I used to watch Smallville the same way. I whenever they sat and chatted to each other for long periods of time, felt like to me, I would not be watching. And then when suddenly action would happen, I would turn. In fact, I would record it and fast forward through it to get to that. Now, 24, on the other hand, was a very action-oriented show that you had to pay attention to. I to this day, it's one of my favorite shows. I didn't know what they were going to do, and if I turned my face from it, I would miss something, and then I wouldn't get something that was going to happen later on. And so for me, Lost was the kind of show I would have as background noise, but 24 was the one where I had to sit and look at it. And I to this day, I always love 24. It's one of my favorites. So people say, well, you name your favorite shows, that'll be in there. And Lost will be one of those shows that I don't count as one of my favorite shows.
Right.
So I say, I had a friend of mine I worked with, and he said to me, I hear you don't like the show Lost. I said, yeah. So why don't you tell me why? I said, okay. So for about 10 minutes, I told him why. He said, you know, I wish I'd never asked you that question. He said, now he was afraid he wouldn't be able to enjoy it anymore. And so I have friends of mine who do the same thing, because I'm part of a group of people who enjoy the writing and how the story is told. Mm-hmm. as a very important part of watching television. I don't just sit there. I want to be engaged. I want to turn on shows. And as Frank Miller said when he read his first Batman comic, he fell in. And that was what I want to fall into the show. I want to forget where I am and what I'm doing. And movies are like that too. If I go to a movie, I was watching, I think it was Rocky IV. Rocky's in the middle of the Soviet Union, and he's fighting the guy pumped full of steroids. He somehow manages to beat him, and in the middle of the Soviet Union, somebody hands him an open mic so he can talk. At that moment, I was out of the movie and sitting in the theater going, oh, man, I sure wish they hadn't done that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because those are the kinds of things that just, you know, drive me insane when I'm watching things.
Right.
I want to be in the experience. I don't want to lose. And your book did that to me. I was literally going like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Definitely also, I talk about this in my class as well. I've definitely also written things where, like, I do expect people to, like, be aware that they're reading a comic, you know what I mean? As opposed to falling in, but like it's all about intentionality and like doing, you know, doing what you planned on doing. When I wrote the comic book adaptation for Clue for IDW, that was like, it was a very meta book. I had a narrator who like acknowledged, from the beginning of it that he's narrating a comic book. And as it went on, he would like talk to the editor, like, just total fourth wall breaking stuff. And so that's an example of where you know, I wanted the reader to be aware of, you know, I want him to be aware every second that, oh yes, I am reading a comic book. And so we were able to do interesting things with that. But then, so I would say that was like the opposite end of that spectrum of what you're talking about. This is definitely the other end of it where I do hope that people read this and are just fully, fully absorbed. So that's really, I was really happy to hear that you had that experience.
It's that is so important to me, because I have had so many times when I've started to watch a TV show, there was a Heart to Heart was the name of the show. It had a happily married couple on television. One of the very few I ever saw. And I would watch that show just to see a happily married couple on television. Right. And I literally would get about 5 minutes into it and I'd say, okay, she's being kidnapped. They're going to rescue her by the end of the hour. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. Sure enough, I'd get to the end of the hour and they did that. And I started to the place where I'd watch like the first 5 minutes and I would do something else and I would come back and watch the last 5 minutes. Yep. I knew that was going to happen. But I loved seeing the happily married couple on television so much that
right.
I put up with all that. But see, with your story, it demands my attention, which I really think is – there's a lot of books that don't demand my attention. I won't mention any, but there are some out there that when I start to read them, I kind of flip. Some books take me 5 minutes to read. Some books take me 15 minutes to read. I like the 15-minute ones.
Right.
That's what I like. The 5-minute ones, if I'm flipping pages, I don't care. And they haven't engaged me. I don't care about the characters. I don't care about the story. Whatever happens doesn't matter to me. But your book, the protagonist, as it's called, as he's called in there, I really cared about what happened to him. We didn't see him long before things started to go awry, shall we say. Mm-hmm. But when I saw him, he was a genuine, let's just say I got to like the guy just in the few pages at the beginning before he runs into the other humans.
Yeah.
I started to really care about what was going to happen to this guy. And of course, he's running, try to get away, and that makes me want him to get away. And unfortunately, that does not happen, but it's such an interesting book. And of course, the butterflies are pay attention to the butterflies is one thing I would tell people, because when they show up it's important. Yes. That's the thing about it. It's called the Butterfly House for good reason. There are butterflies in there, but it's more than just that. There are important things happening that the butterflies represent I'm trying to think of a better word. They engage us on a different level because of what they are, I think.
Yeah.
So it's a great book. I mean, used to full color, verbose. I like action adventure type stuff. Obviously, I enjoy my superhero guys, the Long John's comics. I like lots and lots of color. I like all that stuff. I buy plenty of them, let me tell you. But I also like variety. I want to read something that challenges me. I want something that makes me think and gives me different experiences than what I've had before. And this book did that to me. I had a different experience, let's just say. This is not a superhero book. This is not a crime noir book even. It's something very different that if you're looking for those kinds of experiences, I clearly am. I am endlessly looking for new things to experience and something I haven't seen before. This book fills that bill very well for me. And I like when that happens. Believe me, I really enjoy it.
That's great. That's awesome.
And I just, now it makes me wonder, what in the world are you going to do in the second book?
I'll be honest with you, Claire, my wonderful editor, I don't remember the exact quote because it's like over a year ago now, but when she read the script for this one, she basically expressed concern that you're starting off pretty strong here. But yeah, I will say that future books in the series, they'll all be black and white. They'll all be with one. But they won't all be wordless. We'll be doing different things with them and taking different approaches and different techniques. And basically just, other weird stories. And the second one is, I don't have a final draft yet, but it's like one or two drafts away from being completely written. And you know, I think it's pretty strong. I'm pretty happy with it. It's quite different from this, but you know, I think it similarly has something to say. This is basically the idea of the series is just Juan and I and Claire just being able to do small, weird slipstream stories of the kind that like comics are kind of ideally suited for, but you don't often see them very much in mainstream comics, which is odd.
Are we going to see any of the characters from the first book in future issues?
Never say never, but that's not the plan. Like the plan is for it to be like a complete anthology, like, you know, similar to the Twilight Zone or something. And now someone now will be like a character from the Twilight Zone season 3 showed up in season 7 or something, but you know, but yeah, so I wouldn't exclude the possibility of it, but as of right now, there's no plans for it. And so I have the first 5, what I'm thinking of is the first season mapped out in my brain of what each of those issues will be. So definitely not in those first 5.
So it's not going to be like the Butterfly Patio or something.
No.
Because we may not even see butterflies in future issues the way you're talking.
No, I mean, I feel comfortable telling you that the second issue is called Psychic Barber. So a little different.
Okay. That's going to be interesting. Now, well, let me ask you something. How often do you plan on these coming out?
That's also somewhat up in the air. I had imagined maybe quarterly or maybe every 6 months, depending, because Juan has a pretty busy schedule. He gets a lot of indie comics work because of, you know, how good he is. So a lot of it will be dependent upon that. But our hope is to put them out pretty steadily. And I'm hoping to also build the audience with each one. You know, because they are all standalones, that if folks don't hop on this first one, then if they, you know, hear through word of mouth, that it was good, then maybe the second or third one, they can not only buy that one, but, you know, catch up on the previous ones as well. And so that's my hope is that we'll build our audience with each one.
Now, I meant to ask this before, but how did you and Juan start working together on comics?
Juan and I have worked together for like over a decade now. He actually was I mentioned that my first self-published book was called Clockwork, and it was a collection of a dozen 5-page comics all written by me and with different artists. And I think Juan was like the second or third guy that I hired for that book, but he was the first one to like turn his pages in. So basically Juan drew my first comic that was completed. You know what I mean? The first time I got pages in and got to look at them and be like, oh my God, this is an actual comic. so yeah, we did that. And then we did a mini series called Strange Nation, which came out through Monkey Brain digitally, and then IDW put out a trade collection, and that was that was like about 8 or 9 years ago now, so that was also quite a while ago. And we've done other small things together through the years. We've done like anthology shorts here and there, and now this is our first larger project together again since Strange Nation. So I've worked with Juan forever, and it's been a wonderful collaboration, and I'm so thrilled.
I wish Monkey Brain was still going on in the same form that it was. I looked them up. I was a big supporter of theirs, and I didn't hear anything from them for a year or two. And I looked them up. It's a very different company now.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not the same. But anyway, that was interesting. Now, something else I was truly interested in was the cover, as opposed to, you know, the rest of the book is black and white, but the cover is not black and white. The cover is actually like dark blue with the purple, because Pink Midnight it presents. I guess that is a pink? It looks like a purplish to me. Mm. Some of the butterflies are purple. on there?
It's pinkish. I know I've noticed it looks purple on different screens. So I think that's part of it. But it's I think it's intended to be a darker pink anyway. And okay. I guess I should probably take a look at that and send that to some colorist friends to ask them like how it'll print before we get the print copy done. So yeah.
Now, of course, that leads me to my next question is, what is Pink Midnight? What is that, like a company name, or how does it get named that?
It's basically the name of the line. Like the idea, like I said with the Twilight Zone, is that Pink Midnight Presents is our version of saying like the Twilight Zone, and then the Butterfly House would be like the equivalent of like the episode name. So
Pink Midnight, though. Most midnights are black that I know of.
Yeah.
This is a pink midnight. So
that's the idea. okay. I mean, it was partly a way of tipping off that these stories are going to be a little queer, but also like kind of dark and goth. You know what I mean? I could sit here and like, you know, make up some very artsy highbrow reasoning behind it, but honestly, I thought it sounded cool. that's where that came from.
So it's like, it's pink goth is what this is? Pink goth?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the idea.
but I mean, really, it really has no meaning other than that I thought it sounded cool is the real answer.
Okay, so did you come up with that, or is this something that you guys all developed together, or how did you develop all this stuff?
I did come up with it, and then I approached Juan about it, and he was on board, and then I approached Claire, who's the secret weapon of everything that she works with me on, and she was very enthusiastically on board as well. This is an idea that we've had brewing for a long time. I think I actually, like, back in like 2017 or 2018, got online and was like, "Hey, I'm gonna do a series of these weird one shots with Juan, and you know, so look for them in coming later this year or next year, and it should be pretty cool." But then, like around the same time, my dad got cancer. And he ended up passing away about a year later. And the last year of his life, I was kind of spent a lot of time helping him out and visiting him as much as I could. And then it kind of knocked me, the grief kind of knocked me on my ass for a while. And then basically right around the time we were finishing this issue, so this issue has been in the can for like close to a year now. Cause my mom passed away, a little over a year ago. So it's been a rough several years, but honestly, it's given me a lot of I don't want to say storytelling material, because that sounds very crass, and that's not how I feel about it. But it's given me a lot of things that I want to work out through storytelling.
Okay,
put it that way. And I've already been doing that. I wrote a Power Rangers one shot earlier this year, about a character called the Death Ranger that I wrote in the immediate wake of my mom's passing, and a lot of my thoughts on grief were in there. And my stepdad also, not to just sound like, you know, a Dickens character or anything, but my mom passed away about a year ago. My stepfather actually passed away last Father's Day.
Goodness.
And I had a very complicated relationship with him, to say the least. And there's actually a future issue of Pink Midnight Presents is going to deal like very directly with my relationship with him, like in the form of a ghost story. So, this really is like, it's a Pink Midnight Presents is where I'm doing weird stories. I'm doing, you know, fun stories. But I'm also doing stories that are really like from really deep in my guts. You know what I mean? Like this, like I'm always a writer who puts like my personal life on the page. I think these books are, even by my standards, I'm really doubling down on that.
Wow. So you're a little vulnerable.
That's a good way of putting it. Yes. It's a. I think that sums up me rambling for several minutes.
Wow. Okay. So that's going to be something to see. Well, it's really fascinating. I'm dying to see this. Again, it's Pink Midnight Presents : The Butterfly House.
Yeah.
And zoop.gg. And it's going to be running for 30 days or so. It could be extended. We'll see what happens. If people want to keep up with your projects, like for the Pink Midnight stuff, how do they do that online?
The best way to do that is on Twitter, at Paul Aller. I'm on Facebook, but I use it very rarely, and it's just stuff that's also on Twitter. And I'm on Instagram, but that's mostly photos of my dog, which is also worth following. And if we're being honest, you're going to get a lot of photos of my dog on Twitter as well. but you'll get the comic stuff mixed in with that. Those places.
We have two rescues, and
oh, that's wonderful.
I just, you know, we lost one. We had two females and a male, and the male was very old, and we lost the one, and it took me a couple weeks to get past that. So I understand when it comes to dogs. I'm very particular. Even the neighbor's dog, who I met one, I went up and stroked her head one time, I still feel attached to because of that experience. And I just, it's funny how they do that. They some people say that they're not your complete life, but they complete your life.
They really do. Yeah. I had a friend who, got a dog to like, basically it's like brought it home for a week to see if it was a good fit. And she had me like dog sit it every day when she was at work. So for that week, I had Shorty, my dachshund, who's also, he's a literal rescue. We found him in traffic. And he's a little blind dachshund. And then I had this other little dog, that she had named Jack, running around my apartment as well. And anyway, it turned out that she felt it wasn't a good fit and ended up like giving him back to the place. And that was like, after just 1 week of dog sitting this guy, that was like, that was tough. It was so tough, you know, like, mm-hmm. you really do like so very quickly become attached to these wonderful little guys. But
they have their own personalities, and you get to know that personality. And the two we have are funny. They're two very opposite. One's an older female and the other one's much younger. We usually tend to get older dogs because they have a harder time getting rescued, and we always tend to do that. But this one was one that had been the younger one had been turned back in several times, so she never landed anywhere very long. And so when we got her, she at first, you know, she's unruly because nobody's ever told her what she can and can't do. But she did something really bad. But I won't say what it was, but she looked at me the next morning when we got up, and she gave me this look like, you're not going to keep me anymore, are you?
Oh.
And I said to her, and I went and I sat with her and I said, nope. I said, you're not going. This is your home. You're just not going to get to do that again. I said, sweetie. But okay, so that's how you do that. Now, are there projects of yours besides this one coming out that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I have a TMNT one-shot coming out that's part of the Armageddon Game event. It's Alliance, I think, number 4 or 5, anyway, whichever one has my name on it. Mm-hmm. But and a few other things, but nothing that has been announced yet. I'm in that weird place that comics creators sometimes get, and we have a lot of cool stuff coming up, but nothing that's been announced yet that we can talk about yet. So, yeah.
I like that when people say that, because that means there's good things coming.
Yes, definitely a lot of good things coming, stuff I'm very excited about.
If you don't have anything that you can't talk about, then that's not a good thing.
Right. Absolutely.
So I like that. So that's good. So it's, we've got good things to look forward to with yours coming out. And again, about 30 days roughly for Pink Midnight Presents the Butterfly House.
Yeah. And check it out in a second. We have some pretty cool rewards too. We have a pin that's really awesome that Juan designed. And we also have a variant cover by an amazing artist, Jody Edwards, who it's a watercolor painting, and it's going to be a virgin cover, and it is, go check it out because it is absolutely gorgeous. And some of their cool stuff as well.
It's going to be a great project. I can't wait for it to get done. Hopefully you'll get into, I don't know if they, how many stretch goals Zoop does, but you're going to get into meet your goal and then some, so that we get to see more of these kind of good things.
Absolutely.
So, it's really great stuff. Really fascinating. Like I said, I'm so terrified of spoiling because there's just amazing things that happen, and I want desperately to do it, but I'm not gonna.
No problem.
I want them to enjoy the story as much as I did.
We'll stop the recording and talk about that.
Okay. All right. Again, it's Pink Midnight Presents the Butterfly House. It's zoop.gg /C/ The Butterfly House, all one word. And you can find out a lot more about that there. And Christoph, because I got to tell you, Paul, that was interesting reading. I love something that grabs my attention. I mean, I have to pay attention deeply and watch what's going on. And when I got to the end, I was surprised.
Let's say. Excellent.
Very, very surprised. Now, I love to be surprised. I'm a longtime comic reader. So if you can surprise me, that's a good thing. That's an accomplishment. So I got to thank you for that. Give me a surprise. I haven't got one of those in a while. So I really appreciate that. So keep up the wonderful work. And hopefully maybe you and I'll talk again when you've got other projects coming down the road. But one last time, Pink Midnight presents The Butterfly House at zoop.gg. So keep it up, Paul. Keep going. Good stuff.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.